First of all, it's around 20th episode of this podcast, and I'd like to thank you for all your encouraging words and comments you were so kind to share on my website. It's truly humbling to know that this podcast reaches so diverse geographies already. Since I'm producing it single-handedly, scripting, composing, performing the background music every time from scratch, I realize how far from perfect it is. But you keep me motivated to carry on improving the general experience. That's the plan. Today about the culture of inconspicuous brand strength inspired by bumblebees. Before we go to our fatties, let's start with science. The Gallup Institute for People and Byron Sharp with many other authors for products and brands, they all tell us with replicated results that we will be much better off focusing our resources on winners than trying to fix losers. Eric Barker goes as far as to invite us to ignore our weaknesses altogether. So by this logic, when you have a brand team where one colleague is not performing, you exchange this colleague with a top performer to maximize the talent density in your brand team, just like Reed Hastings is doing at Netflix and very successfully so. Or when you have a portfolio with an underperforming product, you're divesting the marketing and promotion budget from it, sometimes you even discontinue it, and you put these savings into your bestsellers to boost their natural potential. Both will typically maximize your ROI. However, that's easy if you are Reed Hastings and you can outplace employees as you please, or you are the owner of a brand and you can cut half of our portfolio with one decision. But most of us work at corporations and we are often not empowered enough to take all these decisions which we would otherwise probably take. And what we typically experience from our senior board members is them stating, "We invested too much into this product to fail now," or "We trained these people, let's keep this team for now." It's of course the purest example of a sunk cost fallacy or escalation of commitment bias, characteristic for managers closest to final decision-making position. And this is not helping us a bit. So we sometimes end up having a weak product and a weak person on our team. Not ideal scenario, but not hopeless either. Let's come back to our bumblebee as an inspiration. It also has two negative traits. Too fat a body and too small wings. It shouldn't fly, and yet it does, and with 33 miles per hour, it flies much faster than torpedo-shaped wasps or hornets. Over the years, I've tried to fix my weaknesses in teams and portfolios with many approaches. But the bumblebee approach, where two underprivileged characteristics boom when combined, worked for me really, really well. This is where this non-obvious strength can come from. Let's first consider our options when we truly have a weak product and a persistent senior board member requesting to fix it. To be fast, we frequently reach for two buckets with our restricted budgets: awareness money bucket and promotion money bucket. Of course, I'm assuming here that we analyze our conversions across the funnel and we understand that there is no quick fix in other purchase levers like pricing or distribution. We would have done it before and wouldn't be our weak product now if that was indeed an answer. Awareness money can work fine. Usually it will take one purchase cycle to observe its effect and it will generate some incremental trial for our weak product. These people invited by our new media who decide to buy us don't know or don't remember why our product is weak. But they will learn it eventually, so for the repeat purchase there is a rather slim hope. Promotion money can also work fine. Now we are much closer to the transaction and we want to change the consumer's decision for this one purchase when our promotion is on. Consumers will give up on the competitive product and will choose ours instead. They in turn may remember why our product is weak, but as we improve its value for money by reducing its price or promoting it otherwise, they may now consider it attractive enough as long as the promotion runs. So by nature, both buckets are effective only when deployed, only when active. A weak product will attract new trialists with media money, but when the media dry out, there will be no new trial volume coming. And a weak product will convert buyers of competitive product just for this one purchase and promotion, but not permanently, when the value for money advantage will be gone. The whole thing is here that the product itself is weak, which means the purpose it exists is not particularly relevant for consumers. So instead of focusing on technicalities around our product, we may want to redefine its core purpose, its value proposition. If it really has to stay in our portfolio according to our bosses, it should at least connect to a new consumer's need. And I mean new, not barely tweaked. Couple of inspirations that worked in my experience. With our shower oil product destined to shower with, which intrinsically had the tanning side effect in its formula, we position it seasonally next to sun products, which doubled sales. Completely new usage context. Alcohol-free beer is a perfect isotonic drink after sports. Chewing a gum activates the cognitive processing parts of your brain and can be a perfect companion in exams or while expressing your wedding vows when you need focus. So you have a completely different positioning of the same product. The episode 17 helps define or redefine the value proposition. It's not hard, but may take some resources and commitment. And that is when our today's hero's fat body meets short wings to create a speedy bumblebee. We create a powerful combination. Every time we want to invest in resources in a weak product, we will compromise our bestsellers to some extent. I made that mistake more than once. But if you assign this job of repurposing your weak product to an underperforming person, it may work amazingly well. This is how you can get your bumblebee. You give this person a meaningful role and the autonomy to act that evokes the natural need of accountability and ownership. Her or his hitherto unexploited potential starts to gain traction. You keep your top talents away with undisturbed focus on your bestsellers while you create a sort of an island for this weaker person so that he or she could, a bit under the radars, give a new life to a product doomed so far to the mediocre performance. Since they both were underdogs, the person and the product, risk is low by default and prospective gain can be really high. And the reason for that is that any growth of this now not so weak product builds exponential motivation of our now not so underperforming person. It's a perpetually fueled growth mechanism. So to fix your weak product, it seems like you don't have to compromise on your bestsellers. In the meantime, your weak product addresses new needs and becomes a strong brand contributor, and the person considered as underperformer starts to be a valuable player in your brand success. They both start to fly against all odds. I would probably still recommend to maximize your talent density if you can, as it will entail your maximum performance density much faster. But it's comforting to know there is a buzzing alternative. Thank you for listening. In the next episode, we will take on the question as old as the mankind itself. How long is long enough? See you next time.